Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Les Watson. I'm an independent consultant at leswatson.net. I used to be a Pro Vice Chancellor at Glasgow Caledonian University, and I'm going to tell you a bit of a story this afternoon about a building that we built at Glasgow Caledonian University, which I think has lots of lessons in it for where we are with our buildings generally in education today. I don't know how aware you are of the situation, but I think in 1997 we spent in England £700 million on developing and refurbishing our schools. The rate of expenditure now is over £5 billion per annum, and I think that represents a wonderful opportunity, not just to build schools, but to change the education system. And I was having a discussion earlier with some folk about we're not just talking about schools here, we're talking about across the whole educational spectrum. And there are some commonalities between schools and further education and higher education that I think are worth considering. And I'm going to cover some of those in my talk today. Where I want to start is that it is just to say that what we're talking about here is the future. We're not talking about yesterday. We're not even really talking about today. We're talking about tomorrow. And I want to start with a quotation from somebody called Stuart Brand, who wrote a seminal text called How Buildings Learn. What happens to buildings after we build them? And the point he's making here is that all buildings are predictions. Because they're about the future, we don't know what the future is going to be like. We are making a prediction when we build a building. I measure against that the second half of his quotation that says all predictions are wrong. So we have an issue here about how we're going to cope with that uncertainty about the future as we spend our $5 billion a year for the next few years. Brand goes on to say that we can design buildings where it doesn't matter if we're wrong. And I think that's the focus of what I'm talking about here today. We can actually do that. And I think to do that, we have to take a particular view. All of us that work in education, I think, have a sort of open view of the world, which is about a future that we can create. And I think that's what we should be doing. We should be thinking about a creative worldview of the future. What's the education system that we would like to create? And we have to try and create that education system. Now, it is possible to look backwards and look at the data and look at all the information and try to build a future that's about past data. For me, I don't think that works. I think this is much more about trying to create something that we really, really deeply believe in and being prepared to be wrong. Now, the building I'm talking about today is called the Saltire Centre at Glasgow Caledonian University. And that building actually had a strategy that I call Synergy, which is about, this isn't just about the building. It's about the technology and it's about the people that inhabit the building. And I think we have to think about all three of those together. These things add together to produce innovative learning spaces. It's about people and their attitude and their behavior and their activities and their skills. It's about technology, how we embed technology and how we make it pervasive. And it's about the buildings, how we design and configure those buildings. And it's about thinking about all of those things together, not separately. And it's about imagining. So where I started with the Saltire Centre was I imagined an education system like this. Now, you may think we have an education system like this. I don't think we do. And I think this is what we should be creating. This is what we should be thinking about with our technologies and our buildings and the activities of our people. And what I really wanted to do was not revolutionize the system. I wanted to retain the best of formal education, of formal learning. And I wanted, as well as retaining that, to provide new pathways for people so that they could reach new horizons. So this is about the opportunity for new learning pathways within a system that retains the best of the formal and lets people achieve their best and have some fun. So there are some things here that I think are fundamental. What's fundamental is that once we've built a building, it shapes what we do. So we can disable the future through the buildings that we build, and we need to be deeply aware of that. We need to have buildings that will enable the future. And the future belongs to these people, and these people are not like us. These people do different things. these people were born with the internet here. They were born with computers in their hands. And I think they have a different mindset and a different way of working and a different way of learning. And we have to acknowledge that in developing our learning spaces. By the age of 21, they'll have done all this stuff. I'm not going to live long enough to do all this stuff. And if we think about the sorts of things that we value as learning activities, reading from pieces of paper, they're not going to do very much of that. And we have to be aware of that when we're thinking about designing our spaces. And what I think all this adds up to, and there's a lot more evidence behind this, what it adds up to is I don't think that we have an education system that's fit for purpose. And we need to think deeply about how we make it fit for purpose and how we use our resources to develop a system that's fit for purpose. And everywhere you look, the question is about personalised learning. And this is the key question for me. Is it about fitting people into a system, or is it about having a system that plays to the multiple intelligences, learning styles and differences of our students and our pupils? Now, I think it's got to be the second of those two. And we've got to use technology and space to help us do that. Because actually, this is the system we have. And this is not a good education system, folks. This is the equivalent of going to the doctors on a Monday morning with some terrible illness and sitting in the waiting room, and the doctor comes out of her surgery, out of her office, into the surgery and says, "Look, folks, I'm a bit busy this morning, so I'm going to give you all the same medicine and send you home." Now, that's not a good health care system, and it's not a good education system. And we need to think about what we're doing here. And we need to think about how we can use space to help us personalise the learning experiences of our students. And I think there's an issue here about creativity, about how we build creativity into our thinking. And I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Richard Florida, who has a book called The Rise of the Creative Class. And what Florida's done is categorise professions by their degree of creativity. And if you look at this list here, this is the jobs that we find people are doing increasingly. Creativity is becoming a much bigger part of our working lives, and it has to become a much bigger part of our educational lives. And what Florida did was extensive research with these creative people to find out what they were interested in and what they want to do. And one of the things that they're really interested in is experiences. They're no longer interested in goods and services, they're interested in experiences. Now, our pupils in school and our students are the future members of the creative class. And I think we have to build on the experiential part of what happens to them as they pass through the education system, and we have to introduce into that as much creativity as we possibly can. And surprise, surprise, when everybody got a computer and we all got connected to the internet, we thought people wouldn't want to go anywhere anymore. Well, Florida's research shows that's not the case. Place and community are more important to people now than ever before. And creative class people build their networks by going to places as well as working in virtual reality. So we need to think about the importance of place for these folk. While we're talking about creativity, there's a piece of research here by George Land and Beth Jarman that was carried out towards the end of the last century that looked at creativity and measured it. There's a test called the Divergent Thinking Test that you can use to measure creativity. When I used to give this talk, I used to say it's as reliable as an intelligence test, until I realised how intelligence tests are not very reliable. What Land and Jarman did is they administered the Divergent Thinking Test to 1,500 3- to 5-year-old children. What percentage of that population were geniuses for creativity? Well, I'm sure you won't be surprised to find that 98% of those kids were creative geniuses. Now, this research wouldn't have been worth doing unless it was a longitudinal study. So 5 years later, they repeated the study with these children. And what percentage were geniuses for creativity? And 5 years later? And later still? Now, I don't know what that tells you, folks, but there's something going on here that is not good. So I think creativity is a key theme for us in thinking about how we design our learning spaces and what happens in our institutions. I think it means we need to rethink our ideas about what it means to be educated. Now, we have an important tool here, and that tool is called design. And I think we can use design in order to make our learning spaces more creative, inspirational, and imaginative. And I think what we have to do is concentrate not just on what happens in the classroom. What happens outside the classroom is at least as important as what happens inside the classroom. And I think we have to focus our attention, if we're really serious about a nation of lifelong learners, we have to focus our attention on what kids do outside the classroom and how we can help structure and provide frameworks for what they do outside the classroom, and how we can use the facilities that we have outside the classroom to play to the diversity of intelligences that children have and to the different learning styles that they have. And the building that I'm talking about today, the Saltire Centre at Glasgow Caledonian University, attempts to do that. This building started life as a library building, and then it became a learning centre, and by the time we built it, it was a learning centre like no other learning centre in the UK. There's some statistics there about the building. It is a library and it provides the full set of library services, but it's not driven and designed by library operations. I looked at the book stock at the university and found that only one third of it was ever borrowed. So two thirds of it has gone into compact shelving, creating twice as much space for our students. So there are 1,800 seats in this building, and those 1,800 seats exhibit a multiplicity of different environments. They go all the way from large group interactive conversational learning through to silent monastic study. And they use not just open plan space, but they use a lot of semi-private structures. And you'll see some of these shortly when I play a short movie for you. So that was just a short sample of some of the spaces we have in the Saltire Centre. Those umbrellas, for example, are to provide a particular feeling as you sit underneath one of those doing your group work. The inflatable offices provide semi-private space for folk. The graphics provide different environments on each floor, ranging from your private living room on the top floor of the building through the airport departure lounge to the marketplace on the ground floor. And those graphic images are supplemented by colour. We've used the psychology of colour in the building. So the cooler colours are upstairs, where we expect quieter behaviour, and the noisier colours are downstairs. We've also used acoustic signing. So when you walk through the floor, across those bridges that you saw, on the top floor, as you go through the door, a little voice above your head goes, shh, just to remind you that that's the silent floor. And on other floors, you hear different sounds. So on the ground floor, as you go into the marketplace, you hear people shouting, three for a pound, and so on. And what do I think I'm doing with this? What do I think this is about? Well, I think this is about creating a venue. I think our schools should be venues. They should be venues for the community. And it's about creating what Richard Florida calls a third place. The idea of third places in our lives that are not work and they're not home, but they are something that's indispensable to our learning lives, is gaining enormous ground and enormous capital. The idea of third places comes from the retail sector, places like Nike City, VW Volkswagen City, for example. And all of these places, I think, are very special to people. And I think we can make our learning spaces special to people, and we can make them part of their lives. And really, what we should be thinking about when we're thinking about designing learning spaces, our vision and our strategy for what we think learning should be like. And I recommend to you this publication from the Joint Information Systems Committee called Designing Spaces for Effective Learning. And in March 2007, the GISC will be launching a web-based InfoKit on designing and planning technology-rich spaces, which is focused on FE and HE, but we'll have lots of lessons for schools too. So, to summarise, what do I think 21st century learning space should be about? Well, I think it has to be flexible, because at the very beginning of this talk I said we don't know what the future is going to be like, and we have to be able to accommodate it and adapt to it, whatever the future of learning is going to be, hence the use of open, flexible space in that building. We have to acknowledge that learning is a highly social process, and we have to build sociality into our buildings. I worked in a school in the late 70s and early 80s that had teaching rooms, laboratories, and social spaces. And social spaces where the kids had a riot at break, and it wasn't about sociality in learning, and I think that was a mistake. I think we have to bring more sociality into our learning activities. Technology, it goes without saying. The Saltire Centre is 54G wireless, 1800 Ethernet points, uses RFID to manage its books, has IP telephony, all the technology you can think of. And that helps, but that's not what the building is about. above all, I think it's inspirational, and I think our buildings have to be inspirational because what they do, as well as providing a context for our current activity, they define the future. They create our future communities, they define our pedagogy, and they decide how we're going to learn into the future. And I just want to finish off by saying a little bit about strategy, which is where I started talking about synergy at the beginning of this talk. I like this model of strategy, which has four stages to it, and I particularly like the fact that there's a third stage here, which is about imagination. I think imagination has been missing from a lot of our strategizing. We're pretty good at looking at the data and finding out what's going on, and we're pretty good at trying to analyze that data and see what opportunities might offer. We're not very good at imagining how we could really, really make this change, make this better. And I think that's fundamentally important because it's imagination that gave us the steam engine and the car and the telephone and the computer. And all of these things have changed society. And all of these things had to be dreamed of before they could become a reality. So I think our building schools for the future should be about dreams, and it should be about turning dreams into reality. Thank you for listening.